Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
Gen Z isn't lazy. They just simply want to be able to fit work into the life that they want rather than the other way around.
Welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, a podcast helping human-centered leaders master communication to accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build a career with the respect and influence you deserve. I'm your host, David Dye, president of Let's Grow Leaders. Hey, welcome to the show. In this episode, we are talking Gen Z. And if you're leading or soon will be Gen Z team members, you're going to get today some strategies to find the right Gen Zers for your team and help them get off to a good start. Avoid being one of those leaders that's firing half or more of their Gen Z employees within a few months. Help leverage your Gen Z team members' experience and knowledge, all of which is going to help drive your productivity, reduce unhealthy conflict, and improve morale on your teams, just making you a better leader. And here to help us do all of that is Gen Z expert Christine Cruz Vergara, the Chief Education Strategy Officer at Handshake, the leading early career networking organization that helps every student find a meaningful career. Christine, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here.
Oh, I am glad you're here. And it's going to be a great conversation. I know you've got a depth of experience here. Before we jump into all things Gen Z, though, I want to ask you if, and you can take us back as far as you want to, but the question is, when you think of your earliest memory of yourself as a leader, where does that take you? How far back do we go? What's one of your earliest memories of yourself as a leader?
I go back to college for myself. I think for me, I took two classes that really stand out to me. One was actually called a leadership class, and it was with our vice president for student affairs, who was well known for being a great leader. And there was a very long wait list to get into this, class. And the second was an organization that I was actually part of that was called Psychology Peer Advisors. And the way that that class was run was there was a cohort of juniors, 16 of us, and a cohort of seniors, 16 of us. And we were matched up, actually, we were paired up. And the way that the faculty member taught that class was that every single person in that room had a leadership role. And the way he described it was, leadership is an action, not a title. And that always stood out to me in thinking about what leadership was. It started to orient my mind around what makes a leader, what is leadership. And then paired with the leadership class from the vice president, that is where I learned that I had some natural inclinations around bringing people together, communicating clearly, and being able to motivate others in a particular direction. And these were all things that I think I was fairly unaware of about myself until that point in time. So college is probably what I would say.
Love it. And, you know, as you're describing leadership is an action, I'm, you know, if I shorten that, I'm like, lead is a verb, which reminds me of, because I learned long ago, love is a verb, you know, it's an action you take. I love that. Lead is a verb. That's fantastic. And all of those different elements that you started to recognize in yourself as it was, as the opportunity was given and asked of you.
That's right.
And how important that is. Yeah. Something good there for all of us leaders to remember is that giving people the opportunity and asking of it, so often you start to, they'll discover things about themselves and all the opportunity that's there that you might not have been aware of, they might not have been aware of. So thanks for sharing that with us, Christine.
Of course. I think one of the things too that I would just add really quick is it made me realize that regardless of what your role was in an organization, there was something that you could contribute. And that thing was part of making the bigger whole better. And so it, for me, really helped me feel a sense of ownership throughout the entire course of my career, no matter what position I held, whether I was a coordinator in an entry-level role, or an assistant director or associate director in a mid-level manager role, or an executive director, or now a C-level executive at an organization, it doesn't matter. You can all exhibit being a leader in different ways.
And that sense of ownership that you're describing is something every leader, everybody says, I wish my people had more ownership.
Exactly.
Well, there, as you're describing, there are things that we can do to help cultivate that and create that. So, well, let's get into talking about Gen Z. And I saw you smile during the introduction there, but that let's start with the news, because I know most people tuning in, they're listening to an episode, they've chosen to listen to this one, they saw Gen Z in the title, they go, okay. And they're familiar with that crazy article that's been out circulating here for the last couple of weeks about so many Gen Zers getting kicked out after just a few weeks or months of work. And of course, there's some media sensationalism and all that kind of stuff going on in that. But I want to ask you, just as using that as a launching pad for our discussion, what's going on? Where is some of this tension coming from? What are some of the both challenges and opportunities? And then we'll take a deeper dive.
Sure. I think it's important for listeners to recognize that Gen Z is the fastest growing population in our workforce, right? They are graduating. At the moment, there are five more classes of Gen Z that will come behind the current class. And they make up close to a third of, by 2030, they'll make up close to a third of the workforce, right? And this last year was the first year where there were officially more Gen Zers in the workforce than baby boomers. Okay. So a shift in demographic is essentially happening as we speak. And with that always comes some level of adjustment, right? This happened with the boomers, it happened with the Xers, it happened with millennials, and it's happened.
Every 5 years, somebody says, oh, that new generation, they're the worst. And it's always the next generation. It's just
Exactly.
human nature.
Exactly. And part of it is just simply remembering that what makes some generational differences is what that generation has uniquely experienced during their coming of age, right? I was a millennial. We all remember 9/11. We remember the 2008 recession, right? Like those are some of the most pivotal moments for us as we were coming out into the world. For Gen Z, they lived through a global pandemic, right? And so their interests, their hopes, their values are shaped by that common experience that they had because they didn't have work before that moment or that experience. So for Gen Z, it's not surprising to see that for many of them, they care a lot about stability. For example, most of them lived through a heightened period of instability during the pandemic, where everything that they knew about life was suddenly turned upside down, was very different. They had to learn in a completely different way. Some of them didn't get a chance to make friends in the ways that they wanted. They missed out on milestone experiences like prom and homecoming, right? And so for their next chapter, it suddenly becomes much more understandable why they would seek some level of stability. Or some employers sometimes complain, it feels like Gen Z doesn't want to really work. They don't want to be here. It seems like they care more about work-life balance. Well, the reality is, yeah, they kind of do because they went through an experience that made them, and quite frankly, all of us as adults, question what was really important in life.
Yeah,
What do
the
I spend my time doing?
global staring contest with mortality tends to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And so for them, what I hear over and over again from this generation is, I'm happy to work. I'm happy to work hard, but I want it to fit into my life, not the other way around. I want to decide what type of lifestyle I want to live, and I want to be able to start living that now, not wait 4 decades before I'm able to do that.
Yeah. Which creates a natural tension for people who never either figured out how to think that way or didn't think that way or were taught to think differently, that,
Right.
and almost have a responsible, who do you think you are that you get that privilege when none of us had that? What are you talking about? So let's navigate that. Help our audience navigate that tension as it comes up practically in the workplace conversations.
I think there are a few different ways you can think about it. So let's break this down both from an individual perspective and then an organization or team perspective. I'm going to focus on the individual first because I really believe that all change has to first come from the individual. So if you are a manager and you find yourself slightly skeptical of this line of thinking, right? I think you have to ask yourself a real question. Why? Why is that? Is it because I actually envy what it is they're saying and I don't feel like I've been able to do that in my life? If that's the case, guess what? You get to have control over your life and there are changes that you can decide to make or not make, right? There are trade-offs to that. Maybe you feel skeptical because you're like, I think everybody has to put their dues in before they're able to have that type of lifestyle. You should question yourself, where'd you get that from? Is it simply because you had to do that? Is it because that's what you were taught, right? The other piece too is to recognize that actually, if all of us were a little bit more open to what Gen Z is promoting here, it actually benefits everybody. It benefits literally everybody. And I'll tell you how in a couple ways. One, if workplaces were to embrace a little bit more of this work-life balance that Gen Z might wish to have, our overall happiness and engagement in work might potentially increase. We might feel more fulfilled in other aspects of our life. One of the biggest complaints I often hear from employers or recruiters sometimes is, it feels like I have to be all things to all people at work. Our employees expect us to share the same values. They want to have social activities. They want us to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And like, I just feel like I can't win with all of our employees, right? Well, yeah. Guess what? Part of why that happens is because as a society, more and more people have relied on work as their main thing, and they've cut out their spiritual connections. They've cut out friends and family. They're not as engaged in their local community. They don't do as much volunteering, right? That's what happens when people are not engaged in other aspects of their life. They start looking to the one place where they are engaged, which becomes work. And they start wanting work to fulfill all of those different aspects. And the reality is work can't fulfill all of those aspects. So if you're an employer that's like, yeah, that is definitely an issue. Well, guess what? If you actually help Gen Z to have better work-life balance, they'll lay off you on some of those other issues because they're actually going to get that fulfilled in other places. So I think that's the personal piece, is to think through some of those factors. The team piece is, quite frankly, just have an honest, open conversation with your team, right? And you should do it starting from the recruitment process. So when you are recruiting folks, you should be crystal clear about the type of environment and culture you have. And you should want to attract folks that are attracted to that culture. If you have no intention of changing that, you should make sure that that is really clear up front. If you are open to hearing that feedback, you should talk to the candidates you are trying to engage with and hear what matters to them. What are the benefits they really care about? What seems to make them want to work here? And are we doing those things, or do we need to make some changes and shifts in how we lead or what we do? And if you already have folks on your team where you're like, okay, great, I'm past the recruitment process, too late. I'm now faced with team members who have some differences than my own in how they see this, I would say just have an open, honest conversation about, help me understand what you're trying to fulfill here. Let me also tell you what the goals are that we're trying to accomplish. And let's work on a plan on how we can do that mutually together.
That final question you just asked, how can we, is so critical. And I think for so many challenges that we're trying to solve as teams and as leaders are helping their teams navigate these things, getting the criteria out there. Hey, we need this. We need to achieve these goals. This is what we are on the hook for. We're responsible for this. And I hear all these aspects of how we would like to go about doing our work. So how can we achieve both of those?
Yeah.
Let's explore that. And if we can point people in the direction of solving for two or three sets of criteria like that, we can start to find some answers.
Absolutely. I think part of it too is if you have early talent professionals with you, sometimes no one's talked to them about trade-offs. No one's helped them to understand, look, obviously we all have 5, 6, 7 things that we all want in life. And sometimes we can't find all of those things in one place. So have you decided for yourself what are the most important things? And are you willing to take the trade-off to get those things? And to recognize too that it's only a period of time. Sometimes you're willing to make the trade-off for a few years, and then something changes in your life. And now I don't want to make that trade-off. I want to make a different trade-off. And that's okay. So in some cases, as managers, you may be in a situation where you need to also help coach that person to think about that, and or coach that person out and actually find a different opportunity that is better aligned with what it is they're willing to do.
And as you're describing that process, that coaching and those conversations, perspective setting and all that kind of thing, like I don't, you know, I'm a generation ahead of you, so I've got a little, you know, a couple more cycles of this. And I remember early in my career in my 20s with many of my colleagues who had that same level of wanderlust, dissatisfaction, didn't know what they wanted, didn't understand the trade-offs. And no one was being, and I worked in a nice human-centered culture at that point in my career, but so no one was being aggressive or obnoxious. They were saying, hey, this is the work we got to do, but people weren't necessarily, they had not yet figured out some of the dynamics that you're discussing. And I think part of that is just the coming of age process that any good leader, we help mentor and teach and invest in the people who are coming up behind us.
That's right. That's right.
Our guest today is Christine Cruz Vergara, Chief Education Strategy Officer at Handshake. You're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. I'm your host, David Dye. And so we've been talking about some of the challenges, some of the tensions that exist, Christine, and how to go about recognizing and starting to solve those and have those conversations. I want to take the other direction now. What is it that as employers and as leaders, managers, that Gen Z in particular is bringing to the workforce that we would be dumb not to leverage, recognize, and tap into?
I mean, I think first and foremost, they're authentic. They really are bringing their whole selves kind of to the forefront, and in a way that I think is really unapologetic and kind of freeing. And so, think about it this way. You're bringing someone in that is willing to bring their talents, their strengths, their flaws, their wants, their desires to the table. And with that, you can really motivate a large team or organization to move mountains. They're hungry. They are gritty. They've gone through a lot, and they're willing to often put in the time, put their heads down, do the work. They just want to feel like they're making an impact. And I think that kind of drive, in some ways, is very reminiscent of, quite frankly, every generation when they first come out into the workplace. Let's be real. But I think there's something about this generation that, their authenticity will help you because they are willing to give you real feedback and real thoughts in a way that can actually help you improve your organizations if you're willing to listen. If you're
If you're
willing
willing
to.
to listen and accept that it might be rough around the edges because they haven't had that coaching yet to
Exactly.
navigate that, and it's those opportunities.
Exactly. Exactly. I think, you know, and to be fair, I think there are also other hard skills that you get with this generation that you didn't necessarily get with some of the previous ones, right? This generation is already more exposed to AI that is growing and changing so rapidly. To be able to bring in new talent that either has experience with it, is willing to learn it, can learn it quickly, or has thoughts around the ethics of it and the use of it, right, is already something that you're not going to get as much of from a previous generation. So that's one thing. You also are finding a generation. We have this in some of our actually Handshake Network trends we've seen over the past few years. This generation, Gen Z, is more willing to actually be a lifelong learner. So in previous generations, typically what happens is a student graduates from undergrad and they go off to work and they kind of assume, I'm probably not going to have to go to school anymore. Or if they are thinking about continuing education, they go back, get a master's, maybe a PhD, but then again, they finish it and they're kind of done, right? And they, you know, you learn on the job, you kind of tweak at the edges. But this generation, more than half of them said, within the next couple of years, I know that I will be taking a class or a course or a certification or a certificate to learn another new skill so that I can continue on in my career. There's this sort of acceptance around the fact that things around them are moving so quickly, they will constantly have to keep learning. And so I think you're also really getting voracious learners in this generation. And it's a little bit different in the way that they think about that, because it doesn't have to be a formal program. They're just kind of always looking to learn what that,
that
new
integration into what I'm doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, as we're talking, and as I was preparing for our conversation today, Christine, I was thinking about some of our clients. Mm-hmm. One gentleman in particular who just made me laugh. He raised his hand towards the end of the session. He said, "Listen, I'm 26, and I hate to speak ill of my, you know, my peers who are just a year or three younger than I am." He said, "But I am seeing a trend, and I've seen it in a number of people, and I don't know what to do about it." You know, so he was raising it. And I'm going to tell you what he said in just a minute. But then, so I'm talking to a manager, completely different industry, who said, "You know, I'm really having a challenge with," and same folks, Gen Z entering the workforce, and they had the same. So we're talking about like behavioral coaching, science, therapy type industry. And then we're talking about like hardcore engineering. So two radically different industries who, and these people had never met each other and almost word for word described the same problem. They said, "I can't get people to be on time. There's not just this understanding of what timeliness is. And then I can't get anybody to communicate and text if they're going to be late." You know, these kinds of basic, what they are considering like super basic work life skills. Yeah. You'll be on time to whatever. You know, which part of the work-life balance thing, if we're going to do different things, like when you do need to be there, you need to be there. And then, so there's not a sense of timeliness and there's not a sense of communicating if not, and that they are seeing that in more than one person to where it becomes a generality for them. And they're like, "I don't want to put people in a pigeonhole people, but that I'm seeing this." And so, you know, obviously there are ways to address that from a leadership perspective, but I am curious your take if that, what you see there and some of the perspectives, because the final piece of the puzzle they both described is as they try to explain and coach their people, they're met with a quizzical, "Why? Well, why do I need to be on time? That makes no sense to me." And the persons, these people are very serious and they're challenging that, which they found super interesting. So there, I set the table for you.
That is an interesting question. It's, you know, I would say if you're being met with the question of why, that is a reasonable, while perhaps confounding question for some people, it's a reasonable question to actually engage in with your employees, right? Like, because this generation often wants to know that they're making an impact, the why is important. And so if I had this happen on my team, while I might not love the fact that I have to have this explanation or even engage in this conversation about why, and I would probably have a great conversation with my friend at dinner afterward about this crazy scenario that just happened, I would engage earnestly and genuinely in that moment to say, "Well, let me explain to you why this is important, right? We've made a commitment to our partners or our clients in this way. We set a meeting. When we don't show up, and I would ask questions, right? Kind of, honestly, I have a 12-year-old son. I would ask questions the same way I would engage my son. Why do you think that's important? What do you think it says to them if I don't show up on time? What might be going through their heads at that moment in time? What impact does that have on us or on the company? What decision might they make as a result of that?" Right? Like, there are a number of different ways that you could engage that. Maybe it's not an external partner, but they're always late for your 9 o'clock stand-up with your internal team. If you don't come on time or your colleague doesn't come on time, what does that do to our team? How do we still get the information shared? Right? And in some ways, it also opens up for collective problem solving, right?
Yeah.
Let's say the person comes back to me and they're like, "Well, but the thing is, everybody's late. So that's why I'm late too." Okay. What do you think we should do about that? Should we have a conversation with the whole team? Should we reset? Should we talk about expectations of what late means, right? Because for some people, 5 minutes late is not late. But for other people, not being there on the dot is late, or not being there 5 minutes early is late. So maybe we need to talk about expectations. Or maybe the conversation is, Well, all we're doing in this meeting is like getting to know each other, or we're just having casual conversation, or we're just updating each other on the status of our projects. Couldn't we do that this other way? Maybe we could actually. Maybe we don't have to have a stand-up and we could do it that way. But if there's a reason why I think it's important, I have to be able to articulate that rationale, and I have to be willing to engage them in a conversation so that one, they can start to make the connections around why it is important to show up on time and what the implications or the ramifications of those things are. I often think with children, one of the most powerful tools is understanding natural consequences of your choices. And so kind of the same thing with our employees. If they're asking the question why, I would assume that perhaps they have not learned the natural consequence of what happens when you are late.
Yeah.
And so perhaps I need to share that natural consequence of what happens when you are late and help them connect the dots.
Yeah, and you just did such an elegant job of explaining how to have that conversation and the why behind it. And I think the shorthand version of that that I so often hear from leaders and managers, do I really have to have this conversation? Yes. Yes,
Yeah.
you do. Well, no, you don't. No, you don't. But if you want to help people get there, then yes, you do. And that's true for any set of workplace norms. We call it a Cuth code. You know, what does it look like for us to respect one another on this team in this organization? That's different from organization to organization. So, like you said, what does on time even mean? We need to have that conversation. And we can't expect people to just naturally telepathically get it if we're not having the conversation, and much less the reason why behind it. So, and for folks who are like, I can't believe I got to have that conversation. The flip side of this, and this is true again, every generation, every human being has their own experiences and natural inclinations that you don't need to explain or that they might explain to you. So let's just take that one that you just mentioned. You know, our digital natives, you know, a few years back, who naturally are, I can spin something up. I'm gonna just, they have a natural ability that the folks like me, who there was no internet when I grew up, it's like, and I'm very comfortable with it at all, but it's different. My brain's not wired the same way to naturally turn to the tools instinctively. So you've got this person, like you said, with this comfort with AI. It's a natural go-to to start solving problems where you might not have that. And
That's right.
so they're not thinking about why they have to explain why you would go to AI first to you. But if you'll both have those conversations, we're both going to learn, we're both going to grow.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, touching here again, you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. I'm your host, David Dye. Our guest today, Christine Cruz Vergara, Chief Education Strategy Officer at Handshake. Let's see how much time we have. Christine, take a moment and just tell us about Handshake. All of our listeners might not be familiar with what you do.
Sure. Handshake is the largest early career talent platform. We partner with over 1,500 universities and colleges across the US to serve 15 million students and get them connected to the nearly million employers we have on our platform for their first internship and their first job. And now we're actually seeing many of our alumni come back on to find their second job and their third job. So we're all about helping to make sure students and job seekers are able to get the opportunities that they're most interested in.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for sharing that. And I hope listeners, you take advantage of, if you're in the need, great organization and connect with Christine and Handshake. We'll get how to do that in a little bit. So Christine, I was reading some of your writing, some of the articles that you've put out and so forth in Forbes and other places. And you shared in one of those five questions that you like to ask all of your new direct reports. And in terms of human-centered leadership skills and strategies, is so practical. And I wanted to run through these with you. And I'm curious some of the answers that you hear too to some of these, and some of these are questions I ask as well. So I love these, but so let's start here with what do you want, need, and expect from your supervisor? So
Oh,
yeah,
go
talk to us
ahead.
about that.
Sorry.
Oh, you're good. Talk to us about that one.
One of the things that I often hear from folks when I ask this question is simply an opening around communication. A lot of people tend to go there first. I like to be communicated this way. And I didn't actually ask the question of how do you want to be communicated with? I just asked what you need, want, or expect from a supervisor. And I'm always fascinated that communication is almost always one of the things that people will bring up without any prompting. And I think that's because the connection that we have in the workplace is so important and so critical. And whether or not you can communicate well with your supervisor is often one of the things that makes us decide if we like our job or we don't like our job. Yeah. And so it's really wonderful to be able to get right to that at the beginning, and to be able to hear from folks around what that means for them, and something as simple as like the on time. I like to be communicated to via email for these types of things. Slack is really helpful for me for this type of thing. If you need me urgently, text is the way to go, right? Like something as simple as that, you could spend weeks or months trying to figure out if you didn't have that initial opening conversation. It then opens up the door for me to be able to ask a lot of other questions around what they need or expect from a supervisor. And then usually they'll go into some characteristics of what they prefer, whether, you know, they need a supervisor that asks a lot of questions or one that is maybe less of a micromanager, or someone who's going to be really directive around some things. So always really helpful to get a good sense right from the get-go.
Love it. And your second question is a fun one. I can't wait to hear some of the answers to this one. What are your pet peeves?
This is also a good one. Sometimes people will simply repeat something that they said in question one as like, well, my pet peeve would be you not doing these things, right? Or you doing X as like the opposite of that. I think, you know, for me, one of the things that I've often heard is, my pet peeve is being in an environment where I feel like I don't know where I stand, right? And so that's really stood out to me, especially in the past, I would say 5 years or so.
Back to the stability aspect.
Yeah, back to the stability, but also back to the authenticity, right? Like they want a real sort of authentic relationship where they're like, just be honest with me. Just be real with me. If I'm not doing something well, just give me the feedback. I would rather know where I stand than have to come into work every day and wonder what that means.
Well, and related to that is the next question. And this is one that I have definitely have encouraged leaders to ask people this for years. It's so important. Like, how do you like to receive positive feedback? Or constructive feedback, or that improvement focus thing, and I think of the different range of people I've had on my team. Some people love a spotlight and a round of applause, and other people are like, oh, no.
That's right. Okay. So question three is actually my favorite, and it's a three-part question. How do you like to receive positive feedback, critical feedback, and how do you typically respond when you get critical feedback? And I'll tell you actually why I asked this question. So a long time ago, when I was a new manager, I took over a team where I ended up getting the position over an internal candidate that now I had to supervise. And week two on the job, I had to give this candidate, this person on my team, feedback. And I didn't think it'd be a big deal because this person was really bubbly and optimistic and very friendly. And I just kind of assumed that she would take it at face value. She maybe have a few questions for me, but it wouldn't be too awkward. And we'd just kind of move right along. Well, I give her the feedback, and that was not the response I got. She got super icy, stone cold, no expression on her face. And I didn't know what to do in that moment. And I was like, wow, this is super awkward. I'm going to just end the meeting. And I just ended the meeting, and I pretty much avoided her for a week until I had my next one-on-one. And by then, I had had a chance to kind of gather my thoughts a little bit and figure out how I was going to address all of this with her. And in that conversation, I asked the question, how do you actually like to receive feedback? And just out of curiosity, what is your typical response when you get feedback? And her answer to me was really fascinating. She goes, oh, I love critical feedback. I like to get it verbally. I like to get it in a one-on-one, just like you did with me last week. And she goes, and I typically respond by asking a lot of questions and engaging. And I was like, oh, this is fascinating, because that's not what she did at all. And so it gave me an opening to actually say to her, that's super interesting that you say that, because that actually wasn't the experience that I had with you. Do you mind if I share with you what I experienced? And so she's intrigued now. And she was like, yeah, of course. And so I told her how I experienced her. And she's like, wow, I had no idea. She's like, I thought I asked you questions. And I was like, yeah, no, we didn't have any questions, but I'm happy to answer the questions now if you have any, right? And it totally broke down any awkwardness that we had. And it allowed us to have a really open, engaging conversation. And for her, she was like, thank you for giving me a little bit more self-awareness. I assumed that this was how I looked. I assumed that this was the expression on my face, but it sounds like actually that wasn't it. And she's like, I wonder if I've been doing this with more people than I thought. And perhaps that's keeping people from feeling comfortable sharing feedback with me. And that really helped both our relationship and it helped her. And so anyway, after that one experience, I always ask this question. It is literally one of the most important questions I can ask, because as a manager, it helps me prepare for what it's going to be like if I'm giving you, David, feedback and how you might respond to me. And to be honest, I've actually gotten a lot of people over the years that have said, I like critical feedback. I want critical feedback. But if I'm being perfectly honest, my typical response is defensiveness first.
Sure. Human nature. Yeah.
I will get over it and I will be able to come back to you and not be as defensive, but my initial response will be some level of defensiveness. And I'm like, that's great. It's great to know that you're self-aware enough about yourself and that you're working on it. And we'll work on it together. And to be honest, usually those people, by the time I actually do have to give them some critical feedback, it's less, almost because they've named it and we're working through it together. So I love that question.
It's an incredibly powerful set of questions. And I'm just thinking about how would I respond? And I can honestly say that in my entire career, I've never had anybody ask me those variations on the others, but those not so much. And so, and the power of it is exactly what you say. So when you get critical feedback, how do you typically respond? I'm like, well, if I get critical feedback, I have a very high bar for myself. So it means I've let myself down, much less you. If you have to say something, I have really screwed it up. So I'm going to be hurting. And that's the defensiveness you'll see.
Yeah.
And then I will take it and I will process it. And in a day or two, I'll come back and be like, okay, I get it. And then let me ask some more questions and move forward through it. That I think would be my kind of default, if I'm not really being intentional about receiving feedback, response.
That's right.
Yeah. And how powerful a conversation that is to have with your manager when you're getting curious about that. Powerful stuff.
And I should add, all of these questions that I ask my direct reports, I also answer them. So they answer it and then I answer it right back so that they also know for me what that looks like.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that's where I was going to go next. Is like, it seems to me if I'm having this and asking, hey, what are your pet peeves? And it's when you don't do that. I'm like, oh, awesome. I really appreciate you telling me. Let me tell you one of my pet peeves is blah, da, da. And so we're exchanging and it becomes a get to know you in a mutual way. That's going to help us work better together. And I just love it. All right. We're going to we got a couple more questions on this list of five, Christine, but before we do, Christina Cruz Vergara, where can we connect with you? Learn more about Handshake. Where would you send our listeners who are wanting to learn more?
Yeah, for sure. If you want to learn more about Handshake, definitely feel free to visit us on our website, joinhandshake.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, of course. You're welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. You can find me, Christine Cruz Vergara, right there. And I would ask that if you're going to connect with me on LinkedIn, to please just add a little note so that I know you are listening from David's podcast and I can accept you a little bit faster. So that would be a great way to stay connected.
Yeah, there's so many of those spammy salespeople. Distinguish yourself. I'm a listener. I'm interested in what you're doing. That's just genuine, good LinkedIn advice, period, right? All right. And this question 4, how do you like to be recognized when you do good work? I love this question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a good one, because I think sometimes managers are afraid to ask this question because they think the answer is always going to be, well, I want more money, or I want compensation. And sometimes they're not able to provide that. So I'm actually very clear that when I ask this question, what I mean is your day-to-day work, if you're doing a good job, do you want me to leave you a little note at your desk? Do you want me to send you a message via Slack? Do you want me to leave you like a little piece of chocolate, right? Like, are there little things that actually make you feel valued and appreciated? And you really learn quickly. For some people, it's really as simple as like, I just want a note, or I do want that shout out in all hands, or I would like you to actually, you don't need to do anything publicly, but I want you to make sure you pass that along to the CEO. Like, I want him to know, right? Things like that. And it makes it so much easier as a manager to know, okay, for all of my different people, if I've got this written down, I know exactly how to appreciate each of these different folks in ways that they will actually receive it.
And everybody's different. It's like, and it's such an easy question to ask. And I had a woman who loved Diet Coke. I mean, her husband owned an airplane. They did not lack for money, but a Diet Coke meant the world to her. She just like, she had a whole Diet Coke Christmas tree, you know, like
That's
you
right.
just, you don't know until you find out and ask, and it's getting to know people. And then your recognition is that much more meaningful to them as opposed to, the one of the most horrible ways I heard about was a client who she said, yeah, oh man, our manager sends us his favorite cupcake every time we do a good job. And she's like, I know his heart's in the right place, but I'm diabetic. I can't eat this. And, you
Oh
know, and it's like, come on. And so we have a human tendency to recognize people the way we like to get it as opposed to the way they like to get it. And so we can cut through that with this question. All
Yes.
right. Our final question, what is one thing you're working on as a professional this year, and how can I help you?
Yes. So for me, this is not about your tactical goals in your job or your role. This is bigger. This is you as a professional. And my most favorite one probably that I have ever gotten was someone who said, I really want to work on my emotional intelligence. I'm really self-aware, but I am really poor at reading other people. And I know that if I want to advance and I want to move around in my career, I have to get better at that. And I need help understanding what's happening for someone else. And so honestly, that was a goal for 4 years. For 4 years, we worked on that regularly to help her really develop her emotional intelligence and to be able to read a room better. The most common ones that I typically get are public speaking, more executive presence, things like that. But
Sure.
my favorite one was the emotional intelligence.
What a beautiful, beautiful example. And, you know, and as I'm thinking about your relationship with that employee or any of our listeners, as you're thinking about the investing in these five questions, and you don't have to like necessarily like shotgun them and machine gun somebody with this and that and that. You know, you can have it over time, right? Is the relationship that you're building, the fact that you are going to know that person in a way that probably no other manager in their life has if they've had others, or will if they go somewhere else. And you're building loyalty, you're building connectivity, you're building something that they're not getting, and you're investing in their emotional awareness, you're investing in their public speaking, and whatever the opportunities are, the ways to do that, that's not something they're going to get everywhere. And so just from a just basic human-centered leadership perspective, getting the results and building a culture where people grow and thrive, this set of questions are such a powerful way to do that. And I really appreciate you sharing them with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
It's absolutely, I would say you're welcome, but it's really been our pleasure and our learning. So, Christine, really appreciate your time and taking the time, sharing your wisdom, sharing your experience, sharing how we can better engage with Gen Z from the initial screening, recruiting, having the real conversations there. We're getting the right people on our team. We're investing in the conversations, having the why conversations when we need to, asking and learning from their experiences and knowledge and bringing all that in, and then having these conversations, these last five questions we've been talking about, to help connect us and better learn them, be a better leader for them, but also to help them to be a better teammate and a better member of our group. So it goes both ways. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's been our pleasure. All right. If you've enjoyed this episode with Christine Cruz Vergara, please make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of these practical communication skills to help you accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build a career with the respect and influence you deserve. Christine's given you some places to connect. Hope you take advantage of those. And you can also always get some more of these at letsgrowleaders.com/podcast. And I'd like to thank our producer and sound engineer as we wrap up today, Brooke Bradford over at Sheep and Space Digital Business Services, as always, and Laura at Bruck Marketing for their work on this episode. Until next time, let's get those Gen Zers and be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.